Hello. You're about to listen to Conversations. But before you do, please make sure to follow on all streaming platforms. That's including iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Audible. You name it, we're on it. Make sure you subscribe and follow. And welcome to episode 7 of Conversations, the unofficial Versailles-related podcast. I am, of course, Philippe Duc d'Orléans himself, Alexander Vlahos, and I'm joined, as always, by my brother.
Louis XIV, Le Roi, George Blagden. Hello, everyone. And so, to celebrate the 10-year anniversary of our show, we're inviting on very special guests each episode to help us take a deep dive into the hit Canal Plus, Netflix and BBC TV show.
Behind the scenes, conducting their own grand levier, is our very own personal pocket bon ton, producer Nikki Erbel.
We could not be more pleased to have our very first director on the podcast, known for his work on the TV series The Bodyguard, and most recently on Amazon Prime, his movie Roleplay. He himself has directed the most episodes of Versailles, 2 in season 1 and 4 in season 2. So please, everybody, welcome the maestro, directing king, Le Roi himself, Thomas Vincent.
Thank you, my dear people. Thank you.
I always write the intros, Thomas, and I was like counting the episodes of how many. Obviously, you did what the middle, like the thankless block, I think, in any sort of TV show, that one just before the payoff. But then,
yes.
But then you were rewarded of with 4 episodes for season 2. So
yes,
and that I always remember that block of season 2, because I know we're going to focus on episode 7, but that block of opening of season 2, I remember that being incredibly grueling for all of us.
Grueling,
yeah. Like, I think just I don't know.
What, not because
how did
it was
feel
you.
For you coming out from yeah, maybe Tom. I was like, it wasn't grueling for me. I just
no. I remember it was in January, was okay. Wasn't it? It was in.
No, I remember going to dinner parties at friends and falling asleep.
Right,
like, you know,
yeah,
like right away at some point, just after the main course, going, I'm going to sit down on the couch. And
yeah, wow.
But like that must have been. Like, that must be a nice thing to have, to come onto a show, do your 2 episodes, and then for all of us, with me and George, we waited pretty much a year. It was a year from when we wrapped to when we came back to get the green light. And then, so what was that like, knowing that, you know, you were going to come back and work with us all again?
What was very funny about it is that, so Claude, the producer, gave me asked me for a meeting, and he said, like, we really, really liked your work on the first season, and we would really like you to come back and open the second season, do 4 episodes. But there's one thing that you should be like, we really want you to please take into consideration. It's that you are the director who did the most overtime in season 1, and he came with a chart, like, you know, like with a Excel showing me, like, I was really the most expensive director of them all. And like, you need to do something about it. Like, you need to be careful this time. And so I said, yes.
I was crossing my
fingers in my back.
Yeah, I'm in utter shock because this is going to sound really bad, but like the stories that I've always told, George, you've heard these stories many times with friends and stuff, is that Jaleel was always the one that sort of overshot, did too much. We ran over budget. We were over thing.
That's maybe Jaleel was, you know, like in a different competition. Yeah. Like, maybe that, you know, that was different.
No, but we've like pretended, I guess, haven't we, Alex, talking about the show up till now, that like we have a very good understanding of what goes on behind the scenes. And like, we're pretty aware of, like, you know, conversations. Absolutely not. No, because I don't think at any point either.
Different.
Yeah. Neither of us These thought at any point. Worlds. Yeah, it is two completely different worlds. And at no point have we ever thought, I don't think, that like we were doing massive overtime in your first block of episodes.
No, we did. We did. And as much as I don't think I exactly know what happened with you guys when we were partying in Paris at night, because I was going back home to my family.
Sure.
I feel like the fight that I was going through in the production office.
Bless I feel you. Like the eyes, the eyes of that comment was directly straight towards me. Thank you very much for that. George was a very good boy. I know that for a fact.
I wasn't. I was a very boring boy.
Boring is good. But we always start the podcast, Tama, with can you believe it's been 10 years? And yikes. I think it's when we ask that of like the actors that the cast that have come on, it's kind of like a yes and no sort of thing where they, you know, obviously we've gone on to do other jobs and so have you, but like what's so special about Versailles is that the fandom has really sort of lived on continuously. But like for you as a director, are you aware of it being a 10-year thing and that there is a strong fandom around Versailles still?
So that I'm not aware of. But like that, you know, that thing of 10 years, it feels like if I close my eyes, it feels like it's yesterday. And if I count and think of it, well, it's 10 years, like it's one eighth of my life. So it's very long already.
That's true.
And
so bleak when you put it like that.
And when I was watching episode 7 again last night, I was looking at you guys. You were a baby.
Oh.
And all of you. And so, it's been a long time, really. Like it's a cliche moment. Time flies. That's the thing, right? But it's
a decade.
I'm really surprised that, like, in a good way, that people like keep watching the show because there's so much, you know, stuff being poured into platforms day in, day out.
Yeah.
I think in a weird way, I know how, you know, COVID was awful for the arts and culture industry, but it really allowed people to, obviously they had nothing else better to do but then to binge watch TV shows. And Versailles really came back into people's minds during COVID. I know that like in the States, it was doing loads of reruns on Netflix in America. And I know like from, I know this is going to weird, George, I don't know if you've ever done this, but like my following demographic on Instagram, like you can look on who follows, like where in the world they follow you and what the ratio is. My ratio is 85% women and 40 from and ages 40 plus. And they're all mostly in America, South America, like Chile, Portugal, Argentina, and France is huge in France because of Versailles. Like it blew up in those countries where you didn't really, I don't know, think that it was going to.
Yeah.
Like what I think was the 2016 or 17. We went to what's it called? Like Ceylon, like the I'm blanking on the name of the island. South of India, like former to a very remote place in the world.
Right.
And we were in a hotel and my wife is very you know, like she mingles with people and she's much more easy than I am in that respect. And she started talking with the lady who was running the hotel, British lady, and she said, like, I was director and I'd worked on Versailles, and all of a sudden, I mean, like, we were the king of that hotel. Like, you guys were I was very much stepping into her your family.
Wow. It's so nice, isn't it? Like when you do go around the world, like, you know, I don't know, maybe other people do have a concept that something's international, but I'm always shocked when you go somewhere that you don't expect. Like a country that you would think there's no way someone will have seen this show or not, and people come up to you like, wow, it's reached here. Piracy's great.
Because it's that thing, you know, when you're... Yeah, they tell you, well, we've done like 5 million, 10 million, you know, like, like these are abstract figures.
Yeah.
But it's people, you know, and they must be somewhere.
So
just
true.
One person just having the TV show on repeat on their laptop, changing the IP address every time.
I was going to ask, the thing that directors in television get asked most, and probably aren't always honest, is about like taking on a cast. Like, because, you know, being a middle, like a middle director, when you don't establish the show, you are given actors. Did you have some casting decisions to do? You had some people to cast in your episodes?
No, I don't
probably
think
like some guest
yeah.
actors maybe for like soldiers.
Yeah, like really like one day players.
Sure, yeah.
I had some in season two, but yeah.
But that must be so tricky. Like, you know, taking on the
runt of the litter,
taking on us. Yeah, no, but also just everything, like the look of the show, and you know, the crew, and
well, especially when I arrived on Versailles, it was a mess, to be honest. Like it was. Like I don't know if you remember and if you what you knew of that, but like the production was on the verge of stopping altogether. Because they had this new producer at the beginning who had decided that it would produce the show differently from how shows are normally produced, and then it went wrong and he started to hide invoices from the production company, and they nearly bankrupted, and so the crew was not being. Like really paid well anymore, like on time. And when I arrived, like it was like nearly like it was on the edge of striking, you know, like there was word of a strike, like a mutiny on set.
Down tools, like pirates.
And so like that was extremely chaotic for me.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I remember like I was prepping. So I was like, I had an office in Brie.
Yeah, in Brie.
And I was near the accountants. And I could see those guys walking in and out of their office. And they looked like shell-shocked. it was really surreal.
Oh my God.
Just sheets of paper with just numbers on it going, oh my God, what have we done? That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
And but to come back to the cast, which is more interesting, it's always... No, it can be tricky, and it did not happen on their side, but it can be tricky because sometimes you run into, you know, as a director, you feel like your job is to go for it and be open to whoever it is, because that's what you do. That's what you do. But sometimes somewhere it just doesn't click with someone. Like if you had been casting the show, you wouldn't have taken this actor.
Yeah, yeah.
And right, yeah. Even if you put your best, you know, will into it, best smile, best face, actors have like antennas for that. so do directors, obviously.
Yeah.
And they can feel it. Mm. And as much as you can try to, you know, really be supportive and they can tell. And more than like happened to me a few times. And then you start, you know, doing like Freudian slips. Like that's the worst. you know, like at the end of a take, wow, that was horrible. Oh my God, what did I just say?
Amazing.
George, did you get any that was horrible from Thomas?
Almost definitely.
You said to me once, and that was absolutely not that. It's because like there was a thing in English. And I thought that saying "it's pretty good" was meant like "it's good."
I remember that
in French.
Yeah. I remember that.
And you came to me at some point and said, "I don't think you know, but pretty good means well, it's not very good." And I was really embarrassed because what I meant was that it was like "what's good." You know, it's the kind of thing you say. It's like "it's pretty good." Let's do another one.
Yeah.
Then, you know, let's move on.
Yeah. No, that's
but
I remember
to you,
that.
I remember seeing on your face like "whoa." That was tough. And that's not what
I've got a great story. This is about Jaleel. So it's episode one or two, when I'm doing the fight sequence in the corset and stuff. And I'm watching the fight back with the fight coordinator in Video Village. And Jaleel is down to the left and he's talking about some extras and he's watching the scene. And I'm obviously watching it clearly for the fight. And he says, and this is obviously, we've been in France, or I've been in Paris for like maybe a month max of this early on in shooting. And Jaleel goes,
yeah, your French is much better now.
It's not at all. Thanks for throwing me into that. But anyway, and he says, pas mal. And I turn to someone and I say, what does pas mal mean? And it's not bad. And I was so heartbroken. Because again, it's the translation thing. Pamela actually could be, if you, the way you say it could be.
Yeah,
Pamela, that was good. Like, we achieved what we wanted to.
Pamela is not bad, no, but not bad in French doesn't mean the same as in English. Like, you know, in English, when people say, especially in the UK, when people say that was good, it means like they're really pissed. And in French, if you say that was good, that means it was good. You know, that was it. That's one thing I learned working in the UK.
That's
really, oh my God. Yeah.
We were like those actors that like insist on not being like looked in the eye when given notes and stuff. Can you not tell me that it was pretty good, Thomas, please? Tell me it was absolutely amazing and I'll do another take for you. Awful.
But I remember, the one thing and watching the show again last night, that I really loved about the show was that thing that I said that you were all babies. Like, there was a very specific energy to, it was a bit like First Love, you know, for most of you.
Yeah.
Like the, you know, the core of the cast. And, but even some of the not that young actors, because like that energy, that First Love energy is something that came with you guys. And, you know, of course, even, yeah,
I know what you mean. When I talk to like fans or like George, we've talked about it loads. Not on the podcast, but like how magical season one was. That's what it felt.
Yeah,
season one felt magical, whereas season two and season three felt like work in a good way. Like, but those 5 a.m., 4 a.m. pickups felt like work in season two. Whereas in season one, there was this weird, like you said, there was an energy about. Just the combination of people, you know, the Evans and the Ties and the people that were actually like actually living in Paris for 6 months of the year, 8 months of the year, where we were so lucky that we had the Eurostar to dip back home if we wanted to. But like there was, it genuinely season one. I always look back at season one and think, God, what a wonderful period of my life. That whole season was.
Mm.
But it's the kind of thing that you can't prepare, that you can't, you know, like it happens. It's a bit like a miracle. And I could really feel that, for better and worse, when I arrived on set. Like it felt like there was a very, very special mood in this place, which was very touching for me. Like I really felt it, and difficult to handle at the same time because it was young. Yeah. It was like, you know, like it was. Being created as it was happening.
Mm.
Like there was, you know, it was not planned for. And that was nice. And I think it had to do with also the fact that the production was so chaotic at that time, which was not the case later.
Yeah.
Like somehow helped. Like the grown-ups were busy doing something else. Sure. And trying to mop up.
It's so true. Like
the mess they had.
There was a period of time when we always saw David and Simon on set, and then suddenly we didn't see and Anne and Aud and Claude were all at Video Village for the early blocks. And then there was a point where, do you remember, George? Like we turned around, there was literally no one.
No, we didn't see him for 3 years.
Yeah.
No.
Just talking about that, like that sort of magical sort of time, like especially in season one, coming into it. How this is all really good for stuff like for listeners to know, because I'm really intrigued. Obviously, it's like, how aware are you of budget? How aware are you of notes, like in terms of like maybe Canal Plus or Kappa or like at the scale of the job? Do they tell you from the get go, like, this is how much an ep costs and this is how much you've got to spend? Like if you say, hey, I want 100 extras and they say, we'll give you 50. Or does that not come into it? You just shoot your stuff and hope for the best.
No. You know,
you do. Know,
like it's a fight.
Right.
I mean, prepping is all about Excel sheets.
Yeah.
it's all about that. Like that's what we need for this scene. How do we get it? But on every movie, whether it's a show, whether it's an indie movie, whether it's a big production, you're always in best case scenario 10% short. So like directing is a lot of trying to get everything into the room, and the room is too small always.
Yeah.
And it's always a fight, and it always takes cunning And at some point, but that's prep. During prep, it's a negotiation. You're right to say, well, if we write this scene this way, then this is what it costs. And they say, well, no, we can't because we don't have that kind of money. So let's write it differently. But then it's not half as good as it used to be. So you try to, you know, navigate your way through this. And then I should never say that publicly, but and then you get to set.
Yeah.
And on set, it's different. On set, it's a bit like production has its hands, like in a machine, like and you know, I don't know what it's called in English,
like a mincer,
yeah, like some sort, yeah, like a mincer. Like, you just do that, and, you know, like you're pretty much on top. The thing is, if it's good in the end,
yeah,
then they call you back,
yeah,
and they forget,
yeah.
If it's not good, then they remember that it was really expensive, and they don't call you back. So it's always, you know, it's always tricky. But my personal strategy has always to go for, well, it's going to be great, and I don't care. And so sometimes it can be, you know, it can be it can bring, you know, get to conflicting,
yeah, for sure,
situations. But it's fun too, because it's exciting, because you're really pushing the limits.
Yeah.
And I really remember, like in episode 7, we were shooting the final scene, the ball scene.
Yeah.
And you were dancing. Yeah. Beautiful golden boy. And and Claude, the producer, was like literally walking one step behind me. Like everything I was saying was like, are you going to do one more shot? Yes, we need that shot. Otherwise we can't cut the scene.
Right.
And you know, there was a lot. Yeah. It's a lot of it.
Wow. Yeah.
But it often feels as a director that at some point on set, you need to be a bit like a submarine. You know, you go like under the surface, just leave the periscope out and go like, okay, I go.
Yeah.
Like I like, yeah, go on, move, shoot. Do another take, do another shot, like don't give up. And that's how it works.
We had a question come in from one of our Patreon subscribers who asked me and George if we could choose an episode to direct ourselves from any season of Versailles, which one would we pick? And we both unanimously chose, which is a compliment, that we would want to direct episode 7, because we both believe that it's probably one of the most perfect episodes of season 1.
Thank you. Wow.
Of the season.
Ah.
But we both wanted to direct it for some reason. Like,
yeah, so
because think somehow you could do it better.
Exactly. We said it and then we were
it's because it's the worst one. Like, wow, I can't go wrong.
No, we're actors. So what we mean is we just want to take the credit for it. We just want to, we don't have to want to do any of the work.
Because,
oh my God. I watched it last night again and I never watch my work.
I was about to ask how are you with watching stuff back?
I hate it.
Right.
Okay. Wow. I had a very bad night. Thank you very much.
I'm so sorry.
Oh God.
it all felt like I was telling myself, like, trying so hard. You're trying so hard. Too much. Like, just give it a chance. Man. It felt like so. It lacked so much simplicity. I don't know. Like,
oh, really? So what? So you came
last night was
critical. Case, you were watching it with a critical eye, were you? Even though it's been 10 years.
Yeah,
still.
Terrible.
Wow.
Like, I thought, like, you know, after a while, 10 years, I could watch it and enjoy it. And, you know, and some scenes are better than others, regarding my work, I mean.
For sure.
And you know, be relaxed. Uh-uh. Never.
What? Like, so many... So sorry. My God.
I think you're the first person to come on the podcast and just say, like, no, last doing the rewatch was awful. Because we've had people come on that's like, I'm so glad I got to watch it again.
But you
could watch somebody else's episode and I think I would enjoy it.
Right,
you know,
okay.
Or maybe, you know, maybe
you've mainly done
enjoy bitching. Yeah. But no.
But am I right in saying that you've, like, the majority of your work has been more in film? Like, you're very known for your television work, but like you, and film is like story start to end. And in TV, I think it was you who taught me, the first person who sort of made me aware. I'm sure it was you on set just before the Christmas break. you explained that, like, well, I do my cut and then I send it to producers and then they do their cut. And I remember thinking, God, wow, like, so you must watch work back as a director and be like, wow, like 20% of this. Yeah. Like, did you watch it back thinking that, like, oh, they've done a completely different edit?
Versailles was not the worst case scenario in that regard.
Okay, like, that's good to know.
On Versailles, Claude, the producer, who is a former editor, like, he's respectful of director's work, and like, he steps in the end. But I mean, it's like, he's good at it, and like, it does, like, the changes he makes, even if you don't, if I don't always, it didn't always agree, they did make sense. I mean, it was not silly, and so it's fine. No, sometimes when you're working with our American friends, like, that's much more brutal. Right. I mean, like, you deliver your director's cut. You have a week, which is not a lot to deliver a cut.
1 week,
and then 1 week, and then
I was hired like 12 editors to work on the bat, like monkeys at typewriters. Like, come on, guys, we've got to get this movie in cut. Jesus Christ, a week.
And then 6 months later, you receive, like, in the old days, DVDs, and now a link, and you watch what you've signed, which is not what you wanted most of the time.
Right.
Wow.
So, no, it's very different. And usually it comes down to close up, close up, close up. Dialogue.
Yeah.
And director's work is very much about storytelling and connecting scenes together. And, you know, like, yeah, telling the story. And usually often that all disappears.
You've always brought this up, though, and you've been bang on here, Thomas, because, George, you've mentioned it a couple of times that sometimes Versailles editing follows just the people talking.
I'd love to talk about it with George, a director.
Like, saying, did I actually say that? Yeah, you did.
No, I did. I've said it a number of times.
Stand on your ground. Stand on your sword, sir. Stand on your sword. is that there is moments in some of the episodes where you should be on the eyes of the person that's hearing this news rather than the person saying the news, right? And sometimes Versailles lacks nuance, I think. And I think maybe that's because it's, I don't know, we've rationalized it to a British script edited by French editors, which may be completely wrong, by the way.
I think my comment about it was more about the earlier episodes, bit, and they were like very on the nose, like character A is speaking, so we'll leave the shot on character A until they finish their sentence. And now character B is speaking, so we'll leave the shot on character B. Whereas when we get into six, like we said, we've already done episode six, Thomas, on the podcast. We had Madison on. It was lovely. But we were saying throughout the episode, we were like, wow, this is really dark, weren't we? We were like,
yeah,
sure. Like, the show has really become like subtextual plots. And by this point in the season, I think we had gone, okay, now we know what we're doing. Like, lots of subplots against the king and, like, you know. But the early episodes were very like... But that must happen in any television series, right, Tom?
I've made a note of this, is that we shot summer into winter, right? So naturally, episode 6 and 7, we were filming in November, December with you. So Versailles doesn't look pretty in the grey.
It was outside and we were freezing. And most of the places where we were shooting were freezing.
Great for subtext. Just great for subtext. We were all just like...
Yeah, you can see that even in like chateau corridors, like maybe not obviously not Versailles, but like Vaux-le-Vicomte or when walking down the corridor, you can see breath. You can see, and you're like, you know, it was, you know, freezing. It was absolutely freezing.
Wow.
But yeah, the thing is, most of the time comes down to, I mean, that's a bit like kitchen talk, but like there's always hard choices which need to be made when developing the scripts. And hard choices are the one thing that are difficult to make. And so writers and producers often shy away from that. And so you end up with episodes which are too long. And so in the end, well, your first cut is like an hour and 10, an hour and 20.
Right.
And you need to bring it down to something like 50, which is what it should be. And then you need to make terrible choices. And as a director, I often end up like delivering a director's cut saying, well, we brought it down to 1 hour and 10, but now we need to cut scenes. Yeah. And it's not my choice, guys. You know, it's like you need to make your mind.
Yeah.
Which you should have done before, to be honest. But
do you find as well, though, because you were the block 3 out of 4, that you're maybe the cuts that's happened in the edit is actually nothing to do with anything about your episode, but it's about future, like planting seeds for 8, 9, and 10. You know, like things that are like, you know, like that you're unaware of, that the showrunners like David and Simon or Claude are very aware of, like this character definitely needs to be more prominent. No, you're just shaking your finger.
They were not that aware of it.
I'm giving them too much credit, clearly.
I don't think they had any idea what was going on.
Right,
great. To be honest,
great.
It was much messier than this.
Look at me trying to make sense of the whole thing, and you're just like, no, absolutely not. Just
no, it's a chaotic process to a large extent, which is good. And this is a nice thing with television shows, that it's less controlled than movies. And sometimes it makes it sloppier, but at the same time, sometimes also livelier. And especially with guys like you, like with that energy that I was talking about before. Mm-hmm. I think that the quality of the show is not so much in the plot. That's, you know, it's a bit like the plot is half, you know, chit chat and being mean to each other, half plotting against the king. But it's not, you know, like there's nothing really so gripping that's going on. I think what makes it good is your soul that shines in the show. I think this is the quality of it. Like that thing of, like, those kids who were giving the keys to that show, basically.
Yeah.
And that was very exciting. And there is so much, even, I'm sure it was not always easy, and I know, but there is so much excitement that transpires through the show.
Mm.
And I think whether the audience is able to, you know, like pinpointed knowingly or not, I think this is the value of the show.
We've always been surprised, especially season 1, I think, when it came out, how much it became a fandom. Like how, like a show like this doesn't necessarily warrant having a sort of, you know, a fan base and a hashtag and it becoming, you know, culty or Comic-Con-ish. Mm. But it has had that. And for a period drama, costume drama, whatever you want to umbrella it under, and I do think you're right. It's not necessarily about the plots. It's about the characters and the age of us. There was a show, I've said it a couple of times, there's a show in the UK that was called Skins. You know, it was about kids, you know, getting fucked up on drugs and having house parties in Bristol. And it became a huge thing because it was just, that's what I wanted to watch. It was that was the thing that I was doing. So that's what I wanted to see. And I think there's an element of Skins-esque about Versailles.
That I think so.
Got young people.
Which is strange because it's a period show.
Yeah.
Mm. So like no one's can tell, well, this is my life, actually. No, it's nobody's life, actually. Even Louis Gatto's life, it was not like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's complete fantasy. But yeah, I think that like you know, like when I was watching that moment when you raise from the dead, basically in episode 7, George.
Yeah.
And like that moment of recovery yesterday was like, that was very touching there. And the breakup between you and Evan was extremely, like, these were the two genes of that episode, I think.
Yeah.
And this is what make it work.
Yeah.
For sure. You know, often it's, sometimes it's, you know, you have like an amazing plot and so on, and this is what makes a story, film, show work. But I don't think in this case.
Mm.
I know, Alex, stop interrupting the episodes. But I promise you, this one is worth a listen. So, at Conversations headquarters, we have come up with a genius idea for you, the Versailles family. Now listen close. Episode 10, the season 1 finale. We are going live. Yes, that's right. Conversations is going live. You, the listeners, the Versailles family, can join us to watch us record a podcast episode. But not just any episode, episode 10. The big one. The season 1 finale. Go to Conversations Podcast on social media. And if you're a Patreon subscriber, more info will be there on the feed. Now, you can't say we don't spoil you. All right. Back to the episode. So the end of episode 6 is really interesting because obviously we get this sort of weird dream fever sequence, which is where all the sort of people that are close to the king come in and you think it's like real life. And then Philippe gets a sword and then I remember, you know, stabbing you in that sort of metal plate thing, George, that we had to do in the blood something.
Yeah.
And that was a mess.
They built a whole fake chest.
A whole fake chest. It was a magnet. I remember the sword.
Yeah, that never worked.
That never worked. Like, I did that.
It never worked.
I had to be so specific and then I had to hold it because the magnet never. So I stab and I.
I remember. And then in the end, we had to CGI the knife thing. And it felt like it was not going straight into the chest. I mean,
I know.
Yeah.
But then we go into, so obviously as an audience, then we are very aware that we're going to go into episode 7 directly and it's going to have a very different feel to it, which is exactly what we get because of the VFX sort of canvas painting style over the opening shot of Louis's fever dream. Was that something that was scripted or was that something that was, if you can remember this far back, Tom, like, was that something that David and Simon was like, that's what we want to do? Or, you know, how did that
come? It was scripted as a dream scene.
Right.
But I have to say that the idea of the canvas was mine.
High five to you, sir.
Oh, yeah.
but like, they've been very smart in accepting it.
I stupidly didn't notice on the day, I don't think. I must have noticed because you shot me looking at it. But obviously the canvas is a canvas is... in his room.
It's added in post.
Brilliant. No, sorry, but I mean, when he kind of comes out of it, he's holding on to Bontor and he looks up at the wall and it's a real painting in his bedroom that he's fevered off of. So was that you, like, doing your recces and going through the bedroom and being like, oh, well, there's like old man and a
painting? No. That was in the script.
Oh, okay.
Like the Poussin painting was, I think it's Poussin, was scripted.
Right.
And the idea was that Louis was having this nightmare and he thought there was a guy with him in the room. And then when he woke up, he realized that the guy was on the painting.
Right. Yeah.
But like what I suggested was that Louis would wake up in the painting. Like as if he was part of the painting. And
the Excel spreadsheets came out.
Yeah, they're like,
yeah, exactly. How much is this like, there was a spreadsheet discussion there.
Yeah.
But I said I wouldn't go into overtime to compensate.
I will shoot this within the day if you allow me to do a canvas VFX. Brilliant. And then,
amazing.
I've got a question for you because, what in terms of Versailles, shooting. Those beautiful sets that we had in Brie to shooting on location, which as a director, which do you prefer? Like, because I know from my perspective as an actor that I really, really enjoyed weirdly season 1 and 2, the studio stuff, because it just felt more controlled. It felt like we were getting stuff done, which maybe is a big lie. Whereas when we sometimes go out into location stuff, it really felt like, especially you were fighting against the elements and just horses and just loads of stuff. Like, but as a director,
there are pros and cons on both sides.
Right.
As you say, when shooting on the set in Brie, it's much more comfortable. You can really it's much easier technically to work on a film set. But when we were like shooting in Vaux-le-Vicomte, And what was really amazing is that we were standing right on this tile of the floor, and Louis XIV had been there. And like, and we know he stepped into that hole and looked at it and said, well, this is a bit too pretty. And the guy who built it is going to, I can't remember the name of the, like his minister who built this castle, then was sent to jail. and he was there, you know, like that was very...
They always felt like kind of school trips in season one. Like as in, like they felt like... You know, every new location we went to, because I think we didn't go to Vaux-le-Vicomte until your block, I think. Like, we went there quite late. Maybe I've made that up.
Possibly, but yes.
I remember it not being... I remember, like, Maison Lafitte and Parc de Sceaux and... Mm-hmm. But each new location we discovered, we had that whole experience. Mathieu Davigne on the set being like, you know, this is where Louis farted. And it was so much fun. It was like a proper like history trip. And then we had to do work in amongst it, you know.
And like there was something, you know, like there was a vibe in those places, which was inspiring. Of course, it was difficult because like these are historic monuments and it's really like you can do whatever you want, which makes sense. And usually it's gold and all that. But like, I think that like the mix really adds an incredible production value to the show. Because otherwise it would really, you know, like if we had been on in Brie all the time, it would really feel like a soap opera. And it really brought a lot of truth to it.
Part of the we've talked in previous episodes about sometimes, you know, especially the way the scheduled work, they would give us actors and directors, right, we're doing 3 days in the war room. And after you'd spent like a day and a half, you like, I'm sure the director, you must be like, I have come up with every shot imaginable in this box.
Yeah.
How, you know.
Yeah. That's when you start trying too hard.
Well, exactly, like, Alex.
Like, you try to do something you haven't done yet, even if it makes no sense.
Yeah, yeah. Let's put the camera on the roof, and you're like, well, why? Because I haven't done it
yet. It's a new point of view. No, but Alex brought up a really good shot that you do with the introduction of the King's Circle, like, which I love, this whole element in this episode of, like, oh, there's like a band of, you know... the King's favorite people. The King's Circle. And you have this circle shot around the table and like seven people have different lines in this one in this one camera move. And I wasn't in the scene, but I was watching it being like, how? I mean, he got everyone's lines. That must have taken half a day.
Probably, yes. I can't remember really, but if I remember cool. well, I was surprised that it went better than I thought it would, if I remember. Because that was a bit, that was a bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
But it felt great.
It was great.
Like, you know, like to mimic the idea of the circle with the camera circling around them.
It feels like, also very much like, you know, I don't know, like those Poirot's, like the denouement of all the, you know, like whodunit sort of things where you get like, who are the suspects? You know,
really, and it ends on you.
It ends on my face. Classic. Classic. No, and also,
would it be?
And it's also just incredibly like, even this dark, like episode six was miserable in terms of like the thing, but like this, like seeing the palace, seeing the interior of the palace, which is a Brie and also a mix of locations, but with the shutters closed and the darkness and it, and also shooting stuff like in the war room at night, which we've never done before. Our war room was always shutters open, scaffolding in the background, bright lights, you know, all those little things and elements adds like, just like a very specific type of feel. Is that something then that you talk to with Pierre-Yves? Is that...
Of course.
Yeah, it is. It's a very much like, this is the decision that we're making and we're going to commit to this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a dark episode and we're going to go with it.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, you know, we're going to work with the shadows and nights and all of it. Like that was the idea. But I must say, like, Pierre-Yves was great because he had done the whole first season, and it was great to have him because like he was also, you know, telling me of what the discussions had been in the previous episodes. And so like he was bringing some continuity into it, which was great. Really.
I always remember with Pierre-Yves, I don't know if you've ever had this with George, but there was like, you'd obviously do your line run rehearsal with just the director and the first AD, you know, you're in your civvies or whatever. And then you get sort of crew show, which is very basic crew show, and the sound, and Pierre-Yves would come in with his cigarette and his red wine or whatever, and just stand there. He was vaping at the time. He had a big plumed vape.
Yeah, it was.
And he'd stand there.
It was the beginning of vaping.
Yeah, it was. And he would watch the scene, and then he would come over to me, like, I remember it being specifically me and Noemi doing a scene. And he came over to me, and as we were talking, so we were still rehearsing, and I can feel like his hands on my waist, and he's just slowly edging me back so I'm in the window like this. He didn't want to change any of the action, but just like, if I could be a foot further back, it would help him with the light. And
you changed my life. Yeah. If you do that, you change my life.
Make everything so much easier. But it was great. I always remember that. And I always remember also with Pierre-Yves, he would sometimes do B cam operation, right? Sometimes he would do static stuff like that.
Usually it was
usually on the dial by Video Village, but like sometimes he would come and help. But like, I always remember we came back from lunch. We came back from lunch. I think it was like me and Evan doing a scene in the bedroom and stuff like that. And we had A camera set up and B camera set up. He had a slider, those like boards, you know, to move the camera side to side. But he had a glass of red wine from lunch on the side, and he put his vape on the other. But the slider wasn't unnecessary for the shot. He just put a slider on the camera just so that he could have a stand to use his, like, to have his vape.
No. That's how you see that it was 10 years ago today.
Yeah.
An operator with a glass of wine on set. Never.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
you know,
way.
It's like the arrival of platforms. American platforms in the French industry has really changed a lot of things.
Yeah, like,
and like the culture has changed, and
it's become more American or more unionized in that.
More American,
right? Okay, yeah.
In many ways, yeah.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Wow.
But I remember those blockings because it's not the traditional way it works in France. And crew show and all that.
Yeah.
And it's something that I had experienced on Borgia, like since I was working on English speaking sets.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed that a lot. Like that thing of meeting you guys in the first thing in the morning, you know, like you come, just have a cup of coffee. And so what? Okay. So
yeah.
let's take a look at this. I love that. I think it's my favorite moment in the day.
We would get this sometimes so early that the lights would still be off in the Brie studios. We would be reading the lines via candlelight in the dark on our phones, on our mobile phones, before the crew had even turned up, before we'd even done the process. There's a great story to come out. Like I'm jumping ahead, way, way ahead. So season two, you're doing the first block and you're doing the me and Evan reuniting in Saint-Cloud. Mm-hmm. And I arrive on set. Me and Evan arrive in the same car. We get into set. Because obviously, like George said, you shoot out location. So we were doing 3 days in this location. And I get to set. And I'm thinking we're doing things in order. So like I've learned certain scenes. And you were like, right, so we're going to do this scene where you two are outside on these chairs with the robes on looking out.
And a beautiful green screen
in front of us, of course. And I sat down and it was a huge scene. It was like 3.5 pages. Yeah. And I sat down. And I look at the sides and I look at you and your face, you went, you haven't learned it, have you? And I was like, no. I was like, I genuinely did not even think of doing this scene. I sat there and Evan being someone who only did certain days he knew the script back to front. He knew my lines. He knew everyone else's lines. He knew where you were coming from. He was at that point, that was when I looked over to Evan. I was like, oh, he's going to punch me in the face.
Oh no.
Because I was like, we spent the whole car journey to this location just talking. Like I could have been learning my lines with him. And I just remember looking up at you and you were like, and just the your face, I'm just like, oh, you've really fucked up here, haven't you?
Uh-oh.
But these things
we've talked in previous episodes, Toma, about like, you know, both coming from theatre. We're actors who, you know, we always approach a scene and we're like, well, the whole three pages has to be playable from start to finish, all the beats, everything, yeah. And you want to do every moment justice. Sure. And we both said previously, we've worked with actors who, you know, you come on set and for whatever reason, Alex, they've not like learned the text or no, just from your example, I'm saying
just
like whatever
mute
reason,
myself, you guys can have a chat.
No, but I'm saying like you work with that and you learn, like it's taken me a long time to learn, like, oh yeah, they just need 10% that's like Oscar winning. And that's what ends up in the edit. And then you watch it back at edited and you're like, well, I'm not saying I'm about to not like change my process and only give like 10% of the scene.
Don't change it, please.
No.
Don't.
No,
please
I won't.
Don't change it.
But like, you know, you we've all been in things where you watch it back and you're like, on the day, that person showed up and they didn't know a single line.
But I also think that yeah. like, it's a really risky approach because you're basically saying the editor and the director will find my moments for me.
So there's one thing that that really pisses me off to an extent that you have no idea yeah. there. It's like, I know, I've seen that many times.
Right.
And I know when, you know, there's this actor who has not, for any bad or good reason, sometimes very good reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
Like doesn't know his lines or maybe somehow can't perform for whatever reasons. And it's, you know, you end up like spoon feeding every line. It's which is not what happened.
No, I don't mind. Good.
And it's a terrible process.
Yeah.
But you know that in the edit, well, you're gonna get it somehow. But the invisible cost of it is yeah. what it does to the opposite actor. Mm. That's the one thing that really pisses me off. Because usually what it means is that the guy who knows his lines is like, is going to, you know, is going to pay the bill.
Yeah.
Like, since he's always going to be at least okay and probably good, well, we're going to choose the take for the guy who did not know his line. And that's one thing that I find so unfair in the way that this works.
Yeah.
And, you know, happens, you know, like during the course of a 3-year show, it happens.
Oh,
everybody.
You know,
like,
yeah, yeah.
We've, that's life, yeah, of we, course. You know, but we all know some actors for whom it's not life.
No, it's the thing.
That's how they
so
work.
Like, so,
yeah. And it's something that really makes me mad.
Talking about then preparation, the flip side of that, giving preparation. I want to make a spotlight on this episode because one of the most iconic scenes, I think, in the episode is Louis found dancing in that beautiful hallway with Volley the Comte by Bontemps.
First scene we shot, I think.
I was not there that day, and you two
was
weren't.
It?
So I'd love to hear your process. I'd love to hear, when does the choreography come in for you, George? When are you, what are you thinking about shooting this and how, like, and the illness, like what, like in terms of scale, where are you thinking about fever? And Stuart also, by the way, gives an exceptional performance in that
Stuart
moment.
Stuart is incredible.
On paper, I would go as me, instead of like, shut the windows. It would be quite big and like, but he is just playing everything just on that
so,
mic. It's
so
heartbreaking,
isn't it?
Heartbreaking.
Yeah. He's beautiful in that scene. I
think it was our first day together.
That's huge though. That's massive.
Yeah,
That's a big scene. That's like the pivotal scene of the episode.
And I'm pretty much sure. And I ran into a post and I had a black eye.
I do remember that on set.
Yeah. And I remember because, like, on the page, David had written that scene is, I don't know what it was written, but something like beautiful, like trailer worthy. I remember the expression on the page.
Oh my God.
And he felt like, okay, so this one. Like, you need to make it trailer
damn
worthy.
Damn you, David Wollstonecraft, fucking trailer worthy in the script. Like.
And so we chose that location, yeah. which is the Hall in Vicomte, which is a beautiful room.
Yeah.
And we really, like, and I said to Pierre, the light needs to be you know, like okay, like the Excel sheet, like, okay, like Tyrion, winning the whole thing. And so the light really like flows in.
Yeah.
And so we can have like those, you know, because this also dancing is not about saying lines. It's about the body. And we needed some beautiful long shots. And so that was it. And then I remember, yeah, rehearsing with you before.
I remember vividly, like, I went to a choreographer, Alex, called Beatrice.
Right.
Yes. A double barrel surname that I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But she had a dance studio, and the production sent me to learn this. It was the same dance I did in that scene that in the end. So it was one dance that I guess he was creating.
Which made sense.
Yeah.
Saying that out loud, that sounded very dumb. That's the point I'm creating, yeah. But I went for maybe 3 or 4 sessions at this dance studio, but I don't think it was like weeks in advance. I feel like it. I remember towards the end of Christoph's block, we all had like, Thomas wants to see you. You're going for a one-on-one session.
I think you were the first director to actually, because Christoph didn't come and have a chat with us. He was like, I met him on set. He shook his hand and said, right, this is what you're doing. So when you get told that it's like the headmaster wants to see you, you're like, what have I done now? What have I done?
It was great. Do you not remember, Alex? Like, it was like, yeah, oh my sure. God, I've sat for two, I think we were in a coffee shop or a restaurant, Thomas, our session, mm-hmm. and like 2 hours, just going through the script, going, mm-hmm. well, like, what do we want to achieve?
Sorry, I need to interrupt you. You went to a coffee shop. I think mine was in the back horrible room in Bree. So thank you, Thomas, for taking the king out for coffee. And I got dusty asbestos room.
Call sheet order. And that's what it is.
Number two on the call sheet gets the dusty room in the back. Thanks, Thomas. Yeah,
Thomas does not know what he's just done. No, it was because I was early free. I made myself not available and I had pulled Thomas out of bed on a Sunday or something. Let's go with that. I think it was around that same time or when we had the TV meeting and we were discussing scripts. Like that's when I started learning the dance. I'd never done anything like that. It was so specific physically and
it's almost not dancing. I mean, it's taking pauses and, you know, it's a strange thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, not very groovy.
Because obviously. We do have a question, George, from one of our patrons who is called Estelle. And she says, how difficult was it to learn the steps of that dance and how was it created? So now you've sort of kind of answered that.
Yes.
I think, thank you, Estelle. But I think I've now learned this. I didn't know at the time, being the baby that we've already agreed. I think anyone on a set is just when they have to teach an actor to do something, any department, riding a horse, sword fighting.
It's so true.
If the actor shows up, if the actor shows up and is like not horrifically awful, it's like a miracle.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, he can walk in a straight line. Oh, it's amazing. Right. This is great. Tell the producers we've got like a genius dancer.
That was so true.
It was a bit like that. Step forward.
Philippe had loads of fighting sequences and the stage combat person was just like, oh my God, you know how to hold a sword. And I was like, yeah, I went to drama school. I did stage combat. Just incroyable, incroyable. Like, you hit that and you're like, great, great. I've already passed the test.
No, but I've made that sound like it was really basic. It wasn't. I really needed teaching because it was really specific.
I do
specific
remember
movements.
You being quite concerned about the dancing.
I'd forgotten this feeling of like utter trauma that I remember on the day, not because that was a private scene in Vaux-le-Vicomte, the sort of fever dream dancing, but the dance at the end, like when we filmed that, I sort of didn't process it. The mask on, the gold face paint, the crown, the tights. And he walks up on the stage and then does a 180 And in my like coverage of the dance, everyone was there.
Yeah, we were. I was performing to everyone.
They'd kept them in the. I mean, and I remember turning around and going, "What?" Like, oh shit!
But also, like, it was also it was at like 10 p.m. right? Like Thomas saying, like with Claude running after Thomas with a clipboard.
It was supposed to be 6, but it was 10.
Yeah. No. Thank you for the question, Estelle. Great question, but we loved learning it, and I think like it was a like pivotal part of the episode. Really,
100%. Yeah, like, and it's also the most memorable, I think, in terms of when people think of season one, especially when you go through the episodes, like there's a certain scene that always like, that's the one that I always remember, is definitely that one with Stuart's performance. There's some gorgeous cinematography. I know we've touched on Pierre Eve and stuff like that, but there's a really great, there's two moments that stand out for me in terms of like what, and I know, well, one of them I was there for, which is just a little bit earlier than the dance sequence, which is when Philippe sits down on the middle of the bed. And you've put Philippe bang in the center where he sits down, and you can feel like the weight of him potentially becoming regent. And I talked to you about that because you were like, because I think I sat down and I started taking off my shoes, like in terms of like, and you were like, no, I want you to sit and not move, because you told me about the frame and stuff like that. You told me about the fact that it felt almost like crown like with the golden bed frame behind.
Yeah.
How, as a director, when you have those choices, how hard is it to keep track of those choices on something like a long form drama? Like, you know, that scene might have been fourth or fifth in the day. Maybe you've got the idea in the morning when you think about it. Like, how hard is it to also map out?
It's that thing called work.
All right, let's mute his microphone. That's enough sass from
him. Thanks for coming on.
Honestly, it's a lot of work, basically. It's like, I don't know how other directors work, and each of us has a different routine. Mine is to really go through each scene in very fine details, like really outlining what's at stake in each scene, what I should stay away from, what the cliches are that come easily to your mind and you just need to push back, and how the scene, like, where is the scene in the arc of each episode and each character, especially in a character in an ensemble show like Versailles? You need to think of each character like each one of them has a life,
for sure.
And that's also why I had those meetings with you to talk about this arc, each character's arc, so that we all are, you know, aware of what's at play in each scene.
But then, do you not find then that sometimes certain actors throw kind of live grenades into the mix where they might just disagree with, like, so maybe you've had that shot in your head, that Philippe sitting on the bed frame with the gold, and I want it center, and that day for some reason I say no, I don't really feel that.
I'm gonna dance.
I'm gonna stand on the table or whatever. Like, is that like,
it happens every time? And it's fine. No, but it's good. Like, it's what makes it not like math.
Yeah,
you know, It's like, what's very important, I think, for a director is to come up with a very specific plan, like a very specific idea of how should this scene, how it works within the rest of the episode. But then it's a living matter, and the actors come in, and we block that scene, that thing we do at the, you know, early hours in the morning, and then that's when it comes alive. And more than once, like very often, my initial plan doesn't work and I need to adapt. And so sometimes I try to save one thing, you know, like that's really important. Like, no, please, Alex, sit on the bed.
Don't fucking move.
And then you can dance around, whatever. I'll adapt to that. But please, because that thing really matters.
Yeah.
Because it really tells something of how this character is being crushed by everything that's, you know, bearing on his shoulder.
For sure.
That's what I like, and that's what is really nice with actors like you guys. And I'm not, you know, being.
You're always welcome back, Thomas, for this podcast.
You're always welcome.
There's a second moment,
because it was fun. There was something that was very fluid, and and we were having fun doing this. Yeah.
Mm.
So
the second moment I wanted to mention as well, so that was the first one in terms of like cinematography, was there's that moment with the light hitting the mirror, which then lands on Louis's face, which you see when Louis's mm-hmm. coming out of his sort of fever and the sun is rising and stuff like that. For yeah. me, when I look at that, I go, that's a technical nightmare. Like that's like on paper, easy to do with this one mm. shaft of light that hits one part of a mirror that hits Louis's face. Mm. Like, but like, where do you start with that as a director? Do you remember if that was in the script? I imagine that it probably was just like sun.
I think it's a scene that we storyboarded.
Right. Okay.
Because it was like when it gets that technical, yeah. it's really, you need to, the storyboard is not so much a way to decide what to do than to explain everybody what we're going to do and what is going to be requested from every department.
Yeah.
And so we can like really forensically go through every technical detail of how it's going to be made. And, Pierre-Yves came up with this idea of having like, he had like a sheet, like a cover, yeah, a sheet, blanket, with little pieces of mirrors stuck to it.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a light, you know, hitting this, and he was just playing with it. So the light was like, the light on you was coming from, was real light. But then the light that you were seeing that was reflecting from the set, that I think that was CGI.
Mm.
So it's always a mix, and this is what works.
Yeah,
I mean, probably one of the easiest actor's notes you've given is just find your light. Like, they'll do it immediately. Like, oh, can you do this in the scene? No. Can you find your light? Yeah,
sure. We're coming to the end, and you mentioned it very
no
at the very
no
the very very start of the chat, Tom. You mentioned there was a scene. Between me and George, which is one of another scene that I really, really enjoyed filming, which is when, you know, we find out about the Chevalier's treachery yeah. and stuff like that. And I always remember those, for me, those were the scenes, that's what made, and I made season one magical for me, was those scenes with George, like the ones where, because every episode, whether certain characters' development didn't get pushed on, you were guaranteed on Versailles. And every time there was a new script, that Philippe and Louis' characters always evolved, like the with their relationship. I mean, but yeah, I don't have anything to say about it. I just really enjoyed it. There we go. That's me.
No, I remember being like, oh. For that room, I think it was called the antechamber.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
it was
one of the back.
Yes, I said that was used for several different yeah,
churches
rooms
and prayer rooms.
Yeah,
and, yeah.
And to be honest, it looks a bit shitty.
I was just about to say, like, some of the most intense scenes we did on the show were in that room,
and I think it was controllable,
which is a shame. It's not the best set,
no.
to be honest.
Yeah,
but it was.
But it's the one that could. You know, where are we going to put it? Oh, there.
I felt it was also because it was like a long corridor. It was very narrow. I remember it just feeling yeah. like it was like a, it felt like a little mini stage. It felt really controllable. There was only two entrances yeah. to get into.
Yeah,
and it
yeah.
just and
sometimes it's used as a chapel. Sometimes it's used as many things.
Also, most of the time it was actually used for makeup and costume and hair to hide behind when we were shooting, yeah. and they'd come through that yeah. room. Remember?
Absolutely,
it was loads of chairs and all the Video Village people would be looking.
What I really liked in that, like, it's one thing that I did that I liked when watching the
episode. Way, we found like, one.
It started with you, and then we could hear Louis coming in the background, and then just the shoes, and, you know, and the way he was putting his feet in a very, like a dancer. And that was like a shorthand of, here he is.
Well, That moment, like that. I stole that moment for episode 6 of season 2 when Philippe has to plead the king for the day. I said to Mike Bartlett, who was the director, I said, I know George used to do this thing where he would sweep his right foot around and place himself in
yes.
a sort of almost ballerina sort of style.
Oh,
I was
God,
like,
amazing.
Do a shot of that, because then they'll believe that that's Louis, and then you've got the reveal then, it's Philippe. So yeah, that moment that you set up, I pinch. Basically, I've got also got a note. I pinch a lot of things. I worked with Andrew Scott at the National Theatre in a play called Emperor and Galilean, an Ibsen play. And Andrew, this is before Andrew became Andrew Scott. It was like on the cusp. And he would do this thing where because it was the Olivier, it was 900 seats, you know, 900 people in the audience. He would do this thing where he would show that he was crying or like in pain, but he would just open his mouth. He wouldn't actually, he would go, and it was so heartbreaking.
You do. Yeah.
I do that. So I was like, the whole thing really is stolen. Well. The whole thing is stolen.
Wow.
I'm a fraud. You know, I'm a fraud, and that's me out.
Yeah. No, that's like he did it too.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, for sure.
That's how it works.
Yeah. You just steal from the best.
Everybody's stealing from everyone. Yeah,
nothing's an original idea.
Back, it goes all the way to the dawn of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know we're running out of time. I know we are, but I feel like we've not talked about her enough as a character. And I was so blown away by Claudine in this Lizzie. Episode and that whole storyline. And Lizzie Brochere. I mean,
she was
what an amazing like your point about getting incisive with other characters, that was like really satisfying in this episode. Like, wow. I think she's the heart of this episode, actually. Like,
yes, she is.
You care.
She has a very interesting storyline in this episode.
She has that heartbreaking moment having to choose between her father and the king, and she chooses the king, and then there's a whole of that, you know, she's having to, you know. She's slicing up her father, a cadaver, and it's just heartbreaking. And Lizzie's just so wonderful in the whole show.
Yeah, the way she does that, like on that show, I know because like it was Philippe, the second unit director, who shot that scene. Wow. So I'm very easy
done.
With it. I really love that scene. And and the way she looked, like that look she gives him before she slices him is beautiful.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
amazing.
It's been such a pleasure having you on because we get finally to have, you know, enough of these actors. George, I don't want anyone else on this. That's cast. I want all crew from now on. I want to get the sound. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on to talk about.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure.
And I'm sure I'll bump into you in the woods because me and Tom are neighbours. For the essence.
Thank God you said that next bit. I was what?
Yeah, because that was a bit. Yeah, and I'll bump into you into the woods.
Wow, your neighbours. That's amazing.
Walking the dog.
Yes, which is also a euphemism. Anyway, and on that bombshell, ladies and gentlemen.
I wish I was there with you.
Tama Banza, woo!
Thank you.
Woo! Thank you.
Oh.
Wow.
That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah.
Oh.
That was so good. And may I say, I kept looking at the video screens throughout and I was like, you know, when you see someone who you've not seen for a while, I completely reverted to being the 24-year-old boy in Wonder.
I saw that.
But both. I think I saw you as well. Like, just like, we've got this like director on and he's amazing. And
think I've ever really appreciated, this is going to sound really bad, but I don't think I've ever really appreciated the amount of work that it goes into something like Versailles, apart from when we've done this rewatch, if I'm honest. And having someone like Thomas come on, who ended up doing 6 episodes with us, and just knowing how meticulous, and episode 7 is beautiful.
Yeah.
It really is. And just understanding, you're not only dealing with sometimes actors like me who don't learn their lines, but also production and Canal Plus and money and just such a fascinating aspect.
Yeah, so glad that we had him on. It was brilliant. What fun. Amazing.
And also, we didn't bring it up, but I thought you were incredible in episode 7. I think it's your strongest episode.
Oh, mate, thank you. I think it's everyone's. Like what Tomo was saying about, you know, him really trying to like extract everything out of every character he can. Like there were things that I was seeing from characters in this episode that I hadn't seen so far up to the show. We mentioned Lizzie and Claudine, but even the Amira Tai storyline, everything was just like really
also
intense.
Like these, you're really right, the subtle moments, like I really saw like Steve Cumin.
Yeah.
Colbert. Like, oh, there you are. Like the talent of that.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes he's incredibly, you know, wasted on the show. But like there's moments you just think, there you are.
No, amazing.
Like, yeah.
And I have to say as well, like the scene where Evan turns, like not forgotten, but like, you know, you like when I got to that, I was like, oh my God. Like I can't remember the line specifically, but he turns around to you. And does he say, have you been living under a rock these past few years? Yeah. It was it was so good, that scene. Just like,
well, we didn't bring it up with Tom, but like those scenes with Ev, fall under that trap that we talked about shooting out locations.
Right.
We did, I think, one day with Tom out over 6 and 7. Like, and we mean Evan went through an entire relationship in episode 6 and 7.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
like in love, reading a book, and then it goes into like him becoming, and that's all shot in one day. And obviously it's spread out over 2 hours.
Yeah.
But you just think like the memory that we have of certain scenes. And when watching it back, I find it really hard to not go straight back to, oh, that was a horrible time filming.
Yeah.
Even though it looks great.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. Amazing.
Who do we know? Do we know who we've got coming up for episode 8?
Well,
we don't, do we?
What we could do is we could say it's a surprise and hide the fact that we don't know.
Great. So let's do that. So,
but we will have someone by this time next week, listeners. Don't you worry.
Don't you worry. When you're hearing this, we'll have definitely confirmed someone. Okay, great. Well, George, I know you're busy filming. Thank you for making the time.
I love
you as a brother.
You too, mate.
And I love you as a man. I also love you as a child.
Interesting.
Which we'll cut that bit out. Okay, great. And
mate, I love you. This is great.
And thank you. Thank you, listeners.
Thank
we
you.
Also need to do our Patreon list before we shoot off.
Yes, absolutely. We
do. So let's go. And I also, by the way, I am so proud that I remembered that because the amount of times that I've just logged off.
What?
and you and Nikki have phoned me going, you need to come back and do the Patreon.
Yes.
So I'm actually really proud of myself.
Well done. Let me begin by saying thank you so, so much to the incredible Patreon supporters who are supporting us
on
Patreon. Well done, George. Andrea, Estelle, Darlene.
Woo-hoo.
Estelle, thank you for the question as well. Nadra and Karen and Nicole.
And of course, last but by no means least, Daniela. So thank you so much. We love you,
thank you so much.
Thank you for the support. Right. I'm going to shoot off. I've had enough of you.
Brilliant. See you in episode 8, everyone.
Bye. Bye. Season 1 finale. We are going live.